So today's topic is intermittent fasting, as you guys already know, probably from the program. And so we're going to talk about some very interesting things. And I'm actually really excited that so many of you did decide to show up to this, because it's kind of a niche conversation right now. You know, this whole intermittent fasting thing, maybe some of you hadn't really heard much about it before, but this is a trend that's coming really fast and really hard on our industry. And if you guys know how to respond to it, you'll be in a much better position, because your clients are going to start coming to you asking you these fasting questions, and if you don't know anything about it, you're going to be like, oh, that's a bunch of BS. And it may be in some circumstances, but in a lot, there's some utility, and it's kind of nice to have some answers for this. Because, I don't know, you see like kind of one of the biggest kind of hot topic, trendy kind of things in nutrition, at least with your clients coming to you lately, is probably paleo type stuff. And that's going to be around for a while. But if, you know, my crystal ball is right, and it's been right before, it's also been wrong before, this is going to be the next thing after that that's getting a lot of hot attention. Okay, intermittent fasting. The idea that sometimes you eat a little bit and sometimes you don't. And we'll talk about some of the different protocols and stuff. Now, I actually gave this talk, or a talk close to this one, about 2 months ago in the UK. And in sort of researching this talk and also the book that I wrote on the subject, I discovered that there's this whole line of thought around the idea of using fasting to prevent jet lag. And I thought, well, how cool, I'm about to go to England to do a talk on intermittent fasting. I'm gonna do intermittent fasting to try and combat my jet lag. So I delivered my talk in England after 48 hours of eating nothing. And I'll talk about why I don't think that's horrible and why it actually was a good idea in that case right now. So this scientist here actually published a whole series of ideas about preventing jet lag with fasting, and I'll show you what it looks like. This is a little bit more complicated, and there's ones that have come out that are a bit simpler, but the idea behind it is that, so you'd plan your travel, so day five there would be the day that you're traveling. You would sort of stagger your intake during the week, so you would have like day one and three would be these feast days where you would eat like high protein breakfast, lunch, and then a high carb feast for dinner. So you would eat sort of unlimited amounts on these 2 days. And then on the days in between, days two and four, they would be fasting days. And you wouldn't have to eat nothing, but you would just eat super light, okay? And for most people, it's just way easier to eat nothing. And you guys have probably experienced this. In some cases, like you wake up and you're hungry at breakfast time. But if you actually skip breakfast, after an hour or so, it kind of goes away. And then you don't feel like you need to eat till like 10 p.m., really. I mean, you just feel like you can last forever. So I usually find if you're gonna do a fast day, it's kind of best to keep the calories pretty low. And then on your travel day, you simply fast until you arrive at the time zone of your destination, and then you would eat like a normal breakfast, like a high protein breakfast at that time. Right? So for me, the way that my travel had worked out, you know, if I were to apply something like this, I would have fasted for about 36 to 48 hours, something like that. And the idea is that using food to reset your circadian clock can make a big impact for travelers. Now, if you guys don't travel across several time zones often, this is completely irrelevant to you, and I apologize for that. But there are some populations that do this very often. And so in military medicine, a study was published where they looked at these soldiers flying to Korea from the US. And what they found was there was about 7.5 times reduction in jet lag symptoms on the way over, and then amazingly, like about a 16 times reduction in jet lag symptoms on the way back. And that's pretty interesting. I mean, it has applications to what else? What else do you guys think this would be relevant in? What population? Athletes, for sure. Professional athletes traveling across the country, maybe sometimes across 2-3 time zones, and then they have to play a game the next day or a match. Pretty relevant. And it's relevant for me. Probably a lot of the speakers here I perform better, because we travel often across time zones, even if it's just east to west coast. Sometimes that trip from where I live, just outside of Toronto, to California just kicks my ass. So there's some applicability there. And so there was some follow-up stuff. You know, there's kind of a simpler version called the anti-jet lag fast, and that's just like 2 days of prep. You don't have to do all this stuff the week before. So this one is you would just kind of eat normal on your day of travel. You would just kind of skip dinner, and you would fast before and during the flight. You'd cross your time zones. You make sure you drink a lot of water. That's one caveat that I have for the whole presentation. People get this crazy idea that when I say, you know, like fast for 16 hours or whatever, they're like, well, I couldn't go that long without drinking water. And I'm like, that's a weird comment. We're talking food, not drinks, right? So you can have unlimited water. And when you're traveling, you know, I generally, for athletes, for example, recommend about 500 mils an hour when they're on an airplane to help with hydration. So, and then when you arrive, same deal. As soon as after landing, as close to local mealtime as possible, preferably if it's breakfast, you eat and then you just get back on a normal schedule. And even that has been making a difference for people who travel across time zones. Now, for my particular UK trip, you know, I'll show you my travel diet, and I had the publications for the other one. This one is yet unpublished, okay? Can't cite any peer-reviewed journals that it's appeared in. This is just some stuff that I do. And this is kind of what I do all the time. So my normal intake, this is my normal diet nowadays. About 3 days a week, I do strength training. And I'll talk about my goals a little bit later. I think context is really critical, right? My goals may not be your goals. So 3 days a week I do strength training. For breakfast, I just have green tea and water, okay? I never eat breakfast. And you can see why all of a sudden I think this is a big deal. Because if I'm up here saying like, well, I never eat breakfast, and you're like, well, I've heard that you always should eat breakfast, and if not, you're an idiot and you're destined to be fat. But that guy up there, he's not fat. And seems to be in good shape, and he's a PhD in nutrition. So what's going on here? Some cognitive dissonance and tension is arising, right? It's good. Let's sit with it for a while, because we'll address it all over the course of this presentation. All right, so then usually for lunch, I'll have a high calorie, high protein, high carb meal, and for dinner, I'll do the same. I'll do 3 conditioning days a week. So I may do sprint interval training, I may do circuits, stuff like that. Same. Green tea and water for breakfast. And then it's just low calorie, lunch and dinner. And they're protein and fat meals. So the carbs are really low. So it's just loads of protein and vegetables. So those days are 2,000, the other days are 5,000. So you kind of have to know what my training is as well. You know, I blow through a lot of calories through these sessions. But nevertheless, it's just, you see what's happening. There's a cycling effect, calorie and carb cycling, and there's a fasting effect here, okay? And while it sounds all complicated and stuff, guys, it's simple. On my conditioning days, I work out around lunchtime. Afterwards, I eat some meat and vegetables. A few hours later, I get hungry again, and I do that same thing again. On the other days, I'll just add a bunch of potatoes to that. You know, or if there's like good cheesecake around, I'll have some of that. Okay? It's not complicated, it's really simple. You just don't eat breakfast, and then work out around lunchtime, and then have a proteiny and veggie meal, or protein, veggie, and carb meal, okay? Really, really simple. I don't want this to seem more complicated than it really is. But I'll tell you why I do all this in a minute. On the seventh day, it's kind of a day off, but I'll do the same thing. And I, you know, if I'm traveling in there, it'll be a low calorie day, and then I'll just sort of land in my destination and get back on my schedule, okay? So I eat like this every day, and it just so happens that it works pretty good for jet lag. So I also will sometimes have a snack in there somewhere. I'm not like a strict calorie counter. The fact that I know it's around 2,500 calories doesn't mean that I like have a fit day thing and I plug it in and stuff. No, it's just about what I get. And sometimes I'm hungrier than others and I'll throw a snack in there, and that usually comes between lunch and dinner. Make sense? I want you guys to understand, it's really, really simple what I'm talking about here. And so like I say, if I'm traveling, I may extend the fast to 20 hours, because what you see here is if I'm going from dinner to lunch the next day, it's somewhere between like a 14 or 18 hour fast. We'll revisit that idea in a second, because some of you are probably like, I'd never do this fasting crap.